Hello, lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to the Lifebook Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River. For Life Vision Month, December 2020, it all adds up to Life Vision, one of my favorite months, one of my favorite months to produce content for. Today, we have an incredible guest. He's an author and a podcaster and so much more. Martin Sibley is on the line. How are you doing today, Martin?
I'm good, Jordan. Thanks for having me today.
Appreciate you joining us. You've got an incredible story. You've also got an awesome book, Everything is Possible. Check that out, everybody. He's got a podcast, The Martin Sibley Show. You got your, you have a lot of irons going in a lot of fires, do you not, Martin?
Yeah, you know, you don't want to get bored for too long, right?
I guess so, man. I love what you're doing out there. For first-time listeners, can you give a little background on yourself and your incredible journey?
Absolutely, yeah. So I always start with the fact that I have a disability. And I think for people listening that haven't come into contact with the topic of disability, this chat will be a really cool educational journey. And there'll be some things that I'll hopefully be able to share that will really change the stereotype and the narrative that a lot of society, you know, generally has toward disability. But I always like to kind of caveat that although I have a disability, and I'll explain a bit more about what that is in a second, but it's one of those balanced things that it's never defined me, you know, and there's so much else that I've done and I still continue to do that the disability to other extents is an irrelevancy. And I think that point I've just made will make more and more sense as we chat on, Jordan. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the disability, I'm in a wheelchair all of my waking hours. I have a neuromuscular genetic condition called spinal muscular atrophy. So it's basically the message from my brain doesn't get to all of the muscles. So I'm not paralyzed. I've got full feeling all throughout my body, but I've not got the sort of muscular power to walk. And even my upper body is quite weak and quite affected. So sort of physically, very, very affected. But in terms of, you know, when we talk about visions and envisioning, you know, cognitively, I've always been able to go to mainstream school. So I was in schools where I wasn't only with people with a disability, but a lot of my friends didn't have disabilities. Mm-hmm. I ended up going to university where I did economics and a master's in marketing. I learned to drive a car with my hands. So I've driven all around Europe a few times.
Nice.
Just by the power of a couple of thumbs and some pretty cool adaptions. And again, as we can go a bit deeper in as we have a back and forward, but just to set things up, I've kind of gone from the lived experience of having the disability and the barriers of the physical environment, the barriers of attitudes, the barriers of information and procedures and how I've learned to overcome them. And then my career has very much been about how to empower other disabled people, but also, and sort of in a larger scale more recently, how to work with governments, businesses and charities to be more inclusive to disabled people as well.
Oh, that's killer.
Underneath that, as you say, there's various irons and various fires, but that's where the entrepreneurial stuff comes as well.
Incredible stuff, man. Absolutely incredible. What fascinates me the most is you're living this extraordinary life. And that's what Lifebook is all about, is, you know, studying these 12 categories, deepening your understanding, strengthening them, and adding up to an extraordinary life. And it's funny because, you know, disability is a very plain example, but so many people come through challenges to that extraordinary life. And for most people, it's so easy. I mean, I know for me, it's so easy to give up when you hit a challenge, right? But really, it's a mind state perspective. And I would just love to kind of dig into broadly what allows you to live this extraordinary life despite these challenges, whatever they may be, if you could maybe broaden it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last few years I've really doubled down with sort of personal development. I've attended a lot of Mind Valley events and done online courses, and that was where I, you know, got to know about Lifebook. And I saw your parents talking in Croatia last year and Estonia the year before. And, you know, so like there's been a lot, I would say, more formalizing how all of the mindset stuff fits together more clearly. And I'm very happy to break things down into particular areas. But I think it's fair to say, first of all, that, you know, through childhood, through my 20s, I'm 37 now, and I sort of see that kind of when I got to nearer mid-30s or younger 30s, that was when I more, you know, went into the sort of books and the theories and the categorizing right. of personal development. But, you know, in my 20s and as a kid, this stuff just kind of happened, and it wasn't thought through and premeditated. And, you know, I guess it's just easier to join the dots when you look back, right? But I think mindset is absolutely a big part of it. I think, you know, my mum and dad were very much like, you know, I am disabled and I need the funding for the wheelchairs and the care team. So that the kind of bureaucracy of the government support, or like gratitude that there is the government support, but it can be quite a wieldy beast to navigate with the bureaucracy. And then, you know, just actually having to manage the care team now as an adult, it's like having your own business, but it's just to be able to get out of bed and to have a bath and all this sort of stuff. So yeah, I think that there was a, you have to accept the reality. There was a sort of, I have this neuromuscular disability. There's no getting around that. And we have to deal with these certain things I've just summarized. But that doesn't need, as I said at the very beginning, right? That doesn't need to define me. And I can still do all the things that my other friends that weren't in a wheelchair could do. So like I used to play soccer, I used to play football with all my friends in my wheelchair. I just learned how to kind of knock the ball around with the wheelchair. It's an electric power wheelchair. And, you know, I've been on holidays when I was younger before I traveled more independently in adulthood. So yeah, I think in the end, it just boils it back down to those two fundaments of that there was a slight, these are the cards I'm dealt, don't maybe get too victim-y or beat up about it. But on the other side, actually, when you dream big and you plan and strategize and you're patient and you're entrepreneurial and innovative, then as my book says, everything is possible. And that's from pure fact of living my life.
Wow. Man, you know, I think it's interesting what you just said at the end there. Don't be too victim-y. If there's anyone who deserves to feel like a victim, it's you. And I think that for you to not choose that and to decide that that's not the healthy road to go down is a great role model experience. But I want to talk about that specific balance, exactly what you just said there. Choosing your own reality, encouraging people to make the best of their situation, but also not being discompassionate. Right. So one of the things that really affected me when I was younger is I read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. He was
I'm reading that at the moment.
Oh, that's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah. So you get it. So here's this guy who was in a Holocaust. He was in Dachau, right? He was in an internment camp in Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
And he lost everything, man. It was bad. Family members. He saw everyone around. He lost everyone around. He was starving. It was just as bad as it could possibly get. And he basically dives into the philosophy of the meaning of life. And he comes to the conclusion that the one thing that can't be taken away from you is your reaction to the situation. It's the way you. So that's something we talk about on Lifebook a lot. And it's something that we promote. If he could say that, then certainly, like, who could have had it worse than him? However, there's also this other side where if you're, you know, truly a victim in that situation, like, you could be receptive to that message, or you could rightfully not be. Sometimes people don't want to hear that. Sometimes they need compassion and they don't need to be told, hey, make the best of your situation. You know what I mean? So I think there's like a balance when we're trying to help people. And I would love for you to speak on that. And please don't sugarcoat it. Like, if you believe that no situation is too tough to overcome, then I would love to hear your opinion, no matter what it is.
Yeah, for sure. And that's so cool that, you know, you mentioned the book, and I'm reading it with my fiance at the moment, and it's a powerful story. And I think, to my experience of that balance, that when you talked about being discompassionate or compassionate, that is really key. So when I started my blog back in 2009, so for about 11 years I've been creating content, growing community, doing the sort of digital nomad world, and then the projects and the businesses spawned out of that earlier sort of selfless act of just wanting to share content about whatever I was experiencing. And the big reason I started it was I wanted younger people with a disability to have someone to look up to, like a role model couldn't have existed before the internet and social media. Like when I grew up, I didn't really see a lot of people that were in wheelchairs, let alone, I mean, I didn't see them at all, right? But let alone that were then doing really cool stuff. So my motive for starting blogging was about that inspiration for younger disabled people. And what I found, whether they were younger and age was less relevant as things developed, but we sort of talk about trolling and, you know, people online that get a bit cranky and get a bit angry.
Right.
Some of the more negative reactions I got were not from random people that weren't with a disability and, you know, didn't understand disability and just getting weird and saying random stuff to me. It was actually people with a disability that ultimately I was kind of taking away in their world and their framework and their belief structure. I took away their excuse to not work or to not travel or to not, well, ultimately to dream big or to pursue those dreams. And so it's absolutely fundamental when someone feels a bit of that victim reaction that they explore that feeling really deeply and curiously and not suppress it or push it away. And if you're coaching or mentoring, like when I have done this in the past, it's not the best way to just push against it. You kind of want to go with that feeling and explore deeper why they're feeling like that victim reaction.
It's kind of a process.
But of course, ultimately, it's a process, right? And we're all working on this stuff every day. You know, no one's, it's like a destination we're aiming for and then life throws new curveballs and we grow and change over time. And it's always a delicate balance. But I think the point in answer to your original question is that, yeah, it's like being a victim is not the right way or the best way, but we have to be compassionate that when someone is feeling down or trauma has taken place, that they have to find their own way. And we, as society, in a sense, should be more sensitive and warm to the process. But ultimately, I believe the ideal destination is still about anything is possible and looking for the positives and the growth and the opportunity.
Absolutely. But I had never thought of that as a kind of emotional process. And that's exactly what's going on. I just think that humans are so fascinating because we are all different. And compassion and tolerance is definitely the key.
Yeah.
When you talk about trauma and coping and happiness, humor comes up a lot. Since we're talking about, you know, pieces of media that we've consumed recently, there's a documentary called The Last Laugh. Mm-hmm. I think it's called The Last Laugh. And it's all about comedians who have stand-up sets that involve the Holocaust and whether or not it's okay to joke about the Holocaust. And they have Jewish comedians and they interview them. They have Holocaust survivors and they interview them. Some of the Holocaust survivors think it's funny and it helps them cope. Others are totally turned off by it. Like, you should never joke about this sort of thing. I just think it's so fascinating how grief and trauma and coping and humor, it's very personalized. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
I don't know. I just think that's fascinating.
Because when I started at the beginning and I refer to myself as a disabled person in that form, that sort of, you know, disabled before person. And I know in the United States,
we get serious about that.
First language, it's person with a disability.
But you don't let it define you. I think it's kind of admirable in a way.
Well, but what's interesting, because I think to your point about humor is personal, I think language is too. And the reason that we say disabled people in the UK is we say that we're disabled by society's barriers. So when buildings and attitudes and policies and information, as I keep referring to, are no longer barriers to inclusion, I'm no longer a disabled person. I'm just a person.
That's great.
But it places the responsibility on society. But equally, I think the person first language is powerful because we're saying we're people before we're anything else. But it just resonated with your point about humor. that there's so many different ways and preferences that people have.
You're
right?
So right. And oh my God, don't get me started on how poor of a job we do in the States and some of our like accessibility and stuff. That's a whole nother podcast.
Well, and that's a global, that's a global responsibility.
We should be able to, I don't know. Anyways, yeah, you and I will rant about that off air.
Yeah, that's another topic.
Talk to me about, actually, this is a good segue. Talk to me about some of your other work, Purple Goat Agency, the magazine that you're working on. Just talk to me about what you got going on.
Yeah, well, I sort of touched upon it briefly when I said about started blogging. So martinsibby.com is where I always have just, you know, published different types of stories and experiences from, you know, living in London and working and traveling the world. And as the travels developed, I also got more adventurous. I've flown a plane over Stonehenge. I've done husky dog sledging in minus 30 degrees. I've scuba dived. Yeah, like really crazy stuff in general. But obviously, as I mentioned at the beginning, this involved, you know, me physically basically not being able to move at all. So it was doubly extreme for those reasons. And I loved it. And it made great content as well.
What was your favorite out of those three? I hate to cut you off, but what was your favorite? What was the experience where you were like, okay, I'm living this extraordinary life. I'm setting a role model. I'm doing all these things. But then when you actually did it, like when you were in the plane or when you were down scuba diving, you went, holy cow.
Yeah, I would say the scuba diving. It was to go underwater and like the two people that assisted me. So someone was behind and literally sort of, you know, propelling me because I can't obviously propel myself. So they were sort of holding on to me and we went down underwater and they moved forward and they turned me. And then the other person was sort of to the front and I just had to squeeze their finger if I had any difficulties or concerns. So I felt safe.
You just got to enjoy the ride, man. That's killer.
Yeah. And then it was just the stillness and the quietness and it was a bit like exploring space without the rocket, right? You know, 100%. it was just another world.
It's like an alien planet is what I was just going to say. That's killer, man. But sorry, I cut you off. If you please continue.
Then that in the end, that's the power of everything I've done is those type of showing that I had those big dreams. I was able to make them a reality. And whether people with a disability or not read the article, watched the vlog, you know, it had some sort of effect and impact. And that's the thread that runs through literally everything I do. But I left my employed safe day job in London in 2011. And it was, you know, mainly because I wanted to go traveling more. I wanted to have my own autonomy. I was a bit fed up with having a line manager and the structure that brought. And I obviously just had this entrepreneurial streak that I wanted to explore. But so yeah, I mean, the magazine we started in about 2011. So disabilityhorizons.com is articles by the community for the community. So it was the success of my blog. We said, well, look, let's have a platform where people don't have to run their own blog, but we've got, you know, an editor and a structure and a way of growing that. So we get 90,000 readers a month now, and that's been without funding and yeah, just kind of organic growth. And it still struggled to become more like a business in terms of advertorial revenue, but it's undoubtedly provided massive, you know, social impact to the readers. And as I said before, kind of people that aren't disabled read it because it just educates, you know, it's people saying,
I'm sure,
this is how I go dating and have sex with a disability. This is how I go on an aeroplane with a wheelchair. It's interesting for people where disability was so segregated and shunned and a bit of a shameful feeling decades ago. It's great that, you know, society is more and more curious to actually, it's not as weird or as shameful. It, you know, it's just someone that can't see or can't walk, but they've got the same universal dreams and desires as any other human, right?
Right. And I would imagine that the stories are inspiring for that reason, but also, you know, I don't want to go off on a whole tangent here, but my understanding is that a big part of what you do is representation and like marketing properly to people with disabilities. Like that is under appreciated, understood. You know what I mean?
Definitely, yeah. Well, I mean, in a way, it has a chronology and a step-by-step thing. So with the magazine running, but struggling to fund it, the co-founder, his name is Shrin, who's also disabled, the same disability as me, we both said, okay, what product could we create? So we basically launched, we called it the Airbnb for disabled people.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
We got like a, you know,
that's
places
what I'm talking
we
about.
Visited.
That's really smart. Sorry.
Say again.
I said, that's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And that's really smart. Like there's going to be way more of those types of businesses. Sorry, I cut you off again.
No, it's cool. It's cool. It's great to clarify that your point, I think, in the end is around that there's this business case, right? There's representation, which sort of has a moral or a civil right or a legal connotation. But when you have representation from a business case, like there's 1.3 billion people with a disability globally, it's said that that's $8 trillion per year spending power.
Exactly.
So when you have a platform like Airbnb and you make it inclusive and accessible to more people with different needs or additional needs, it's not just moral and legal, which it'd be nice that there was the ethical case and that was enough, right?
But no, you've also created value.
Yeah, exactly. We do live in a capitalist world and that provides a win-win. So yeah,
that's cool.
We called it Accommable and we vetted properties. We got early adopting customers. We had grants. We got investment. Anyway, we sold it to Airbnb in 2016 or 2018, I think it was.
I love hearing stories like that, man.
It's cool, right? And it was sort of fairy tale that we'd said we will launch and we are launching and we have launched the Airbnb for disabled people. So for Airbnb to acquire it without us obviously knowing that that would be our exit was a nice sort of neat bow to the story. But when you kindly mentioned Purple Goat, so that's, I launched it back in April. I partnered with a global advertising agency. So they've got the knowledge of marketing and how to scale an agency. I've got the knowledge about the needs of, or at least the network and the experience of how to get the needs of 1.3 billion people into product development and marketing communication. So Purple Goat is now working with brands across all industries to help them all do what Airbnb did by acquiring our startup. So we're more of an agency model than a startup now.
I love it, man. I think that people will connect with this episode and admire you through this episode because it's like you're a bit unstoppable. I think the problem with fulfilling our life vision is that so many things tend to stop us. Other people's stuff, our own limiting beliefs, sometimes completely out of our control. Like COVID pandemic, you know, sometimes yeah. Completely out of control, like your situation, something you're born with or something that develops without your control. Do you have any final advice here before we wrap it up? It's Life Vision Month. Life bookers are dreaming big. They're trying to make their ideal vision a reality. They're trying to live an extraordinary life. Maybe they're struggling with limiting beliefs. Maybe they're struggling with lockdown. Maybe they're struggling with major health problems like you. Maybe they're just unsure of which path to take. Do you have any final thoughts and advice for them?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for that awesome question. I mean, I think the best way for me to answer is to go a bit more vulnerable. I think, you know, without a doubt, I've always had an ability to dream big and I've always had an ability to execute. And that, as you've kindly said through the chat, is admirable and inspirational. And I hope those sentiments land with people. But I think, you know, there's obviously those times where I've had burnout and I've had other businesses that didn't work. And there are days you just wake up and you're tired and stressed and things aren't working as well or as quickly as you would hope. And I think that's probably most important to leave people with that, you know, I'm not Superman and I do have to look after my, you know, physical well-being, my mental well-being. And you mentioned COVID and the sort of impact and the, again, use that word trauma. I don't use that word trauma lightly, but it has been traumatic,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
This year in different ways. And I had the whole sort of, our government in the UK asked people with certain health conditions to shield, and I'm under that bracket. So I was told to basically not go out even when the rest of the country wasn't officially
right.
in lockdown. So having traveled pretty much every month the last 6 years, 7 years, I haven't really been anywhere this year. So I think Purple Goat has been a beautiful positive that I've been able to just focus on and not think too much about everything else going on in the world. But there was a crunch point midsummer that I started to feel pretty down and a bit depressed. And I felt, you know, prevention rather than cure, I'm going to tackle this head on. And so I actually did have a few sessions with a therapist. And it's something that I've always wondered at different points when I've had those little dark moments that we all have. But I also had a stigma about mental health. And if you get help with it, does that make you weak? You know, the kind of
right.
brawl that Vision talks about, the kind of old stuff that's probably not true, but we've all been told it by parents, by society, by teachers, whatever. But I broke through it this year and I was like, do you know what? I need to speak to someone that, as much as I'm open and chat with loved ones, and that's a really important thing I can always encourage people, like don't suffer in silence, don't suppress your feelings. I do share it with loved ones. But yeah, for me, it was the best thing I ever did to have a couple of months of therapy. And I sort of feel this year looking back, there were some really dark times. I kind of, you know, relate it to being a caterpillar in a cocoon. And I even cut off a bit from my normal diet of personal development. I just wasn't really feeling some of the positive sure. mindset stuff. But the last month, I'm just like this butterfly that's come out the other end. And I feel like COVID, even COVID, has been a blessing because it's made me work on some stuff that I used to try to avoid. And so I guess my overall advice to wrap this up is that, you know, do dream big, do keep going, but be kind to yourself. And back to what we were saying earlier, work through those emotions, even the negative stuff. Because in the end, if you play the long game, you'll always get where you need to be and want to be, and it'll work out well.
I love it, man. This was an absolutely inspiring interview. I can't thank you enough, Martin, for taking the time to do this. You know, we had some back and forth a little bit offline, but I didn't know this was going to be such an inspiring and just easy interview. I appreciate you, my friend.
No, thanks for having me on. And everyone listening, have a great envisioning time and a great 2021.
Well, let's make sure we give out martinsibley.com, MartinSibley, and you're going to be able to find everything here. You can click through to the book. You can click through to the different community projects. They'll be able to find all the projects that you mentioned there, right, Martin?
Yeah, and social media as well. I'm all over social channels if that's easier.
Yeah, throw that out just at Martin Sibley.
Yeah, exactly.
At Martin Sibley. Get at him, everybody. Lifebook members, I hope you enjoyed this Life Vision interview. We've got some great content headed your way for the remainder of the month and into 2020. We appreciate you, Lifebook members, so much. We hope you're having a great time crafting your life vision, and we hope this interview helped you hone it a little bit more clearly. This is Martin Sibley and Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.